So, what a great sound. Bird Bone Unlimited and Not Gonna Stop out on Star Creature. And I've got on the line Timothy Mudbone Tucker. Tim, great track.
Hey. Oh, man, thank you, thank you. What's going on?
Oh, welcome, welcome to England. Welcome to Radio Newark. It's an absolute pleasure to have you in on the line and telling us all about you, the great music that you're making. So, Bird Bone Unlimited, tell me about the band. Where are you based? What are you doing?
Well, I'm based in Sacramento, California, and Brian Ellis is based in Southern Cal. And this was a project that was kind of just put together. He contacted me about collaborating. And so we just decided to, you know, work on a couple of tracks, and Star Creature was interested in putting them out. So he sent me some instrumentals, and I just kind of did what to do and sent it back, and he dug it because I dug what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a given. You know, he sent me some killer tracks. And so I sent it back, he dug it, he mixed it, Star Creature dug it, and next thing you know, poof, we had a single.
Fantastic.
That simple.
Good stuff. Because I don't know about in America, but definitely in England and Europe, Boogie, and in particular, is doing really well. It's getting a big resurgence. Did you make it specifically for the European market?
I'm sorry, say that again, please?
I say, did you make it with the European market in mind?
You know, I just kind of... It was kind of weird how all of this happened. Because Birdbone Unlimited was actually a project that happened after my initial project, which was with Love Crime.
All right.
But Love Crime, we had a previous track in 2012, and that kind of generated the interest from Brian Ellis, and then the Birdbone Unlimited project was kind of formed after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had before I, you know, I kind of went through the original Boogie phase back in the 80s when I was playing in my band Divinity out of Oakland.
All right.
And so I had kind of, you know, had moved on. I was doing Northern Soul stuff. I was singing in cover bands, doing Motown and Soul and Funk. And so I just happened to be in a record store and ran into Ben and mentioned, we just were talking music. I hadn't met him, didn't know him. And mentioned I was in a band out of Oakland, and he just kind of, you know, perked up and said, "Do you have demos?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I gave him a box of demos, I think more than he was expecting. And so he just kind of came back and started telling me about this whole Boogie market and this Boogie scene and Boogie vibe that's going on. And I mean, I'm familiar with the music. I mean, who's not? I mean, you know, this stuff's good. And so I just was kind of, you know, had my head stuck in Northern Soul because I was, you know, doing that whole thing for at the time. And so when I kind of got back in it, I was real shocked at how, you know, big of a following, you know, was going on with it. So of course, you know, I was interested because, you know, it was definitely in my wheelhouse and it was something I was familiar with and loved. And that's kind of how I kind of got back into it. So it was been a learning process for me, seeing how deep it is. I mean, all around the world. I mean, from France to L.A. to
Japan's
DC
a big
to
player.
Portland. Yeah.
Yeah, Japan are a big buy. Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, fantastic.
It's crazy in a good way.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm quite intrigued to say that you're playing Northern Soul out in Sacramento. I thought that was just a little English thing.
No, no. Well, you know, I'm a little long in the tooth. So,
you and I are the same age. We're the same age.
Yeah. Well, okay. But then you know, I grew up listening to '60s music. You know, we had AM radio back in the day, and so we had a nice mixture of music. So I got a nice, you know, smorgasbord of different things, and so I'm very eclectic in my taste.
Good.
And Northern Soul, that just hit me. You know, that just was like home to me. And then I realized that there was this whole other wave of like soul music that was just outside of, you know, the traditional Motown that everybody had been fed here in America.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't hear a lot of that stuff. And so from following a lot of, you know, my UK family, I started finding out and learning about all kinds of cool, you know, soul music that was, you know, obscure and just kind of unknown artists. And so I just, I took the deep, you know, I dove off into the deep end and I was just lost. So I just kind of, you know, left everything behind because it was just so much.
Yeah, well, that's
constantly.
That's it. You see, the thing that fires me up about the Northern Soul scene is that because the music isn't mainstream, each record leads you on to a dozen other records. And each of those records leads you on to a dozen other records, people you've never heard of, songs you've not heard, and even revisiting B-sides and things like that. What was popular back in the 1960s, yes, it's still popular now, but the B-sides were like fillers, but now the B-sides are getting more of a play than the A-sides. So it's great how music tastes change, but we still seem to appreciate the 60s and 70s sound. And
it
80s.
It all comes down to... I'm sorry.
Carry on.
I was just saying, it all comes down, we appreciate quality.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And the music that was assembled back then had a quality that is sadly missing in a lot of, you know, stuff that's going on.
Absolutely.
But
yeah,
we won't go there.
I know what you mean.
We won't go there.
Lovely. So,
but, you know, I say... Oh, I'm sorry. I say they you call them fillers, but now they're killers, you know?
Absolutely, and, yeah.
Because I find stuff all the time, B-sides, that are just like, wow.
Yeah.
How does anybody just skip over this, you know? But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, you're a musician in a band as well as a songwriter and a musical producer. You're a musician as well. Do you come from a musical family? Where did it all start?
You know, it just started with...
Is it school,
with
church?
No, it started with records. I've always had a love for records. You know, my mom tells a story about me being, I had to have been probably 3 years old
right.
at the time where we were living, three and a half. And she would put a stack of records in front of me, and my other brother, who was 6 years older than me, she'd put a stack in front of him, and she would say, you know, find this such whatever record, and I could always find it before him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just brilliant. And it just used to freak everybody out, and it was just because I would play records all the time. She could sit me in front of a record player and wouldn't have to worry about me.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of those kids that needed a lot of attention. It was just something about, you know, that spinning disc that, you know, had me transfixed, you know, and if there was good music coming out of it, you know, that was all, you know, better. And so from that, I just had a love for, you know, music, melody. And one day my mom just hit me up and said, you know, this lady in the church is teaching piano. You want to take some lessons? And I might have been, I think I was about 13. And I said, sure, you know, because, you know, I was kind of a little square church boy. So I wasn't really doing, you know, much. And so I started taking lessons, and I took to it like duck, like water. And I just kind of, you know, excelled in it really, you know, fast. And so I ended up going to a school of performing arts, doing all of that. And from that, I found my first original band members from Divinity. And then we formed a band, and then the rest was history. I was bitten by the bug, you know, and I just dove into the funk, you know, Parliament, Prince, you know, anything that was, you know, funky, funk based. And so, of course, that led right into, you know, Kashif, you know, and then it started leading into all the other funk stuff that kind of, you know, bridged out from that. And so that's pretty much how it started. So it's pretty innocent, you know, it's all those doggone 45s.
Yeah, great stuff. It's music affects people differently. I mean, it's a great healer, and it's a great, it overcomes a lot of barriers as well. But the thing that I notice most about it is that how people react to it. I know that, like, when I was buying records, not that I've necessarily stopped, but I sometimes had them delivered to work. And the people in the office would say, oh, what you bought? Never heard of it. Play it. So I'd find it on YouTube and I'd play it. And I'd be sat there in rapture, and they just wouldn't feel it. They'd look at me, gone out, and say, ah. You know, because I'm saying music is something you feel. It's not something you hear. And a lot of people just can't feel it. I feel sorry for them.
Yeah. A lot of people are just preoccupied with things that, you know, unfortunately, that society deems it important, so they, you know, feel like they need to focus on that.
Yeah.
I just have a different view of life, and I think, you know, it's supposed to be a little bit of a give and take, and, you know, you know, and with music, it's so easy to give such good vibes when you create, because you're just pulling from, you know, this place within your head that nobody else understands, and if you can touch them with that and move them, it's the greatest feeling, you know, to actually move somebody. And I think that's why a lot of people play records, is because, you know, you cultivate this collection of great music and you share it. It's that wonderful feeling of sharing something positive, you know. And it's so nice to see that didn't die, you know, when people started going to CDs. And you know, a lot of people held on to vinyl and, you know, kept that going.
Yeah.
And now they keep saying, oh, it's making a comeback. It never left.
Never left. No, never left. Great. So Birdbone Unlimited is one of the projects that you're currently working on. Tell me about Love Crime. That's another.
You know, Love Crime is a part of the, it's based out of Sacramento, and that's my friend Ben Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy I met that got me initially started in all of this. He, like I said, he hit me up, and it was really crazy, because back in the day, you know, we were all poor, you know, but we didn't care. We loved it, you know, what we did. We didn't care. We loved what we did. We were young. We were making music. We rehearsed 8 hours a day. So, you know, it was literally, we get together at 12 and we rehearsed all day until 8. And so, but we would do gigs, and we were weekend warriors. And so, you know, being weekend warriors, you know, you also have to survive, but you want to be creative. And so it used to be funny, different bands, we would borrow each other's four tracks. And so when we would get a four track or a recording device, we would sit and literally record all day and all night. If we had it for 3 days, we made sure there was nothing going on those 3 days, and we would get together and record. And if I had it for 2 weeks, I would, you know, use it for a few days, then pass, you know, the four track to another member in the band, and they would write some. And that's, so we were always writing. And I don't think, you know, Ben was kind of, you know, I think he was kind of shocked when he saw like the tub of cassettes that I had. And then I told him, I said, yeah, well, you know, that's just what I got. I mean, everybody in the band has probably about this much stuff. And so, you know, that kind of started the whole Love Crime thing, because we were like, I always wanted to release a 45, and and he, you know, wanted to release a 45. So we said, well, let's, what he said, let's, you know, release some of these demos. And I was kind of shocked. I didn't think that, you know, there would be a market for it, because they were not completed. They were just ideas, stuff I'd done in my bedroom. And he comes back and says, we need to release this. And I'm looking at him going, huh? And so we started releasing some of the basic demos, and they were, you know, they were received very well.
Great. So let's have a listen to that track then. Here from 2017 is Love Crime and Electric Lady.
Electric lady.
From 2011 then, that's Love Crime and Electric Lady. Coming up next, we've got the brand new release from Birdbone Unlimited. There's the latest release then from Birdbone Unlimited and a track called Freaky Things We Do. So new and yet so retro sounding. What a great sound. I mean, how did that come about? You and Ben Johnson, is that something you set out to achieve?
You know, he says, well, let's actually make something new that has that old flavor. So I said, okay, that sounds like fun. And so he sends me this beat and, you know, and this cool bass line thing. And so I pull out my board and start laying some parts on it and threw down a vocal idea and sent it back to him. And then next thing I know, it's finished and I'm sending it over to be, and I'm like, what? You know? And so it really happened really fast. And shockingly, it took off. Everybody liked it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, you know, let's do this.
Quite right.
You know, just that simple. It was just like, let's just do this. I mean, I could write and you can write and we'll put stuff out. And that's kind of how it happened. We, you know, we both have our record selling things that we do. He has a store, brick and mortar here in Sac. And so he's selling records and I sell records online. Mm-hmm. And then I have, you know, my day job. And so we, it's not like we're a full-time band. It was just kind of like a thing to create and put stuff out and, you know, be involved in the, you know, the community and contribute to the community. And that's kind of how it formed. And I like it. You know, we work, you know, together both in terms of music as well as digging and hunting records. We just went on a dig a couple of weeks ago together and it was all just a great amount of fun. So it's kind of a nice little project. It's not, something that's very restrictive because it allows me to work with other people and other projects, both locally as well as online.
Yeah, because you do write for other people as well, don't you?
I try.
Well, no.
I try.
Tell me about Freaky.
I met an artist. I had wrote this song, Freaky, back when I was in high school. And then was because of this, the boogie thing we were doing, I was revisiting some of the older songs I had written and revamping them a little bit. And he was, you know, pushing me to do that and suggesting I should, you know, write more. And so I needed a female vocalist. And so I had seen Key online, and I went online and I looked at her page and kind of checked her out. And she was had recorded with Sony Music, and she had did some releases in the early 80s. And I think she was Sony in Europe. But, you know, she was here in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, let me approach her and just, you know, see if I can get her, if she'd be interested in doing the track. I sent her the music. She loved it. And she says, you know, this would be awesome. You know, and she mentioned doing a house version, you know, because she was really big into doing, or she is big into doing house music.
Yeah.
So I said, well, yeah, that's great. Let's just put it together and make it happen. And she came over. She sang it, killed it. You know, I mean, literally, two take, boom, done.
Wow.
And I just said, oh, awesome. And it took a while to get out because I was in the process of working with Love Crime on other releases and dealing with my store. And so, but I finally got it out. And we did a limited press, about 200. And so they're available online through the website and as well as Bandcamp. And she's just amazing. I mean, just a great, great vocalist and entertainer.
Lovely, lovely. And she's not the only one that you've written for either, is she? What about Pierre? That was back in 2011. Did a track called Sherry Snow?
Wow, now Sherry Snow, yes. Pierre. Pierre is a drummer that plays in a band, one of our our best friends, a band called The Strip, which then changed their name to Funky New Culture.
Right.
And back in the 80s, there was two bands, Divinity and Strip. And people used to kind of compare Divinity to like the Revolution and mm-hmm. Strip to the time in terms of our style of playing and look. But they were definitely just one of the funkiest bands. And ended up working with Pierre through a mutual friend I went to school with. And he asked me, you know, I want to write these songs, work on some demos. And it was around the time I had a 4-track. So I actually was able to record. And so he came over and we wrote this song. And the funny thing was, is we didn't have a drum machine. I had a 4-track, but no drum machine. So I ended up playing the drums on a keyboard with a kind of clap sound program or something, and I actually have that 4-track demo. But I wrote this music, and I wrote the first verse. He wrote the second. His name is Kevin Brooks. He wrote the second verse, and then he took it to The Strip and Pierre, and they ended up doing their arrangement of it, which was killer. I love what they did, and so it was one of the songs, one of the first songs that Ben had heard in my demos. And he said, we need to release this, along with this other track with one of the singers in my band, Veronica. We did the flip side, So In Love. And the writer of that one was another artist that was in Oakland, Kenny Taylor, who was in a band called Radiant, who was signed to Quest.
Mm-hmm.
So we all were kind of like working like a big family. We all knew each other, so we all worked together on various different projects. So when Ben hit me up about the song, I had to, of course, get in contact with all these people and put it all into play. And so, you know, we just opted to release the song under Pierre since he was singing on it, even though technically the whole group produced it.
Right.
But it was just a great rendition that they did of it. And that's how that one kind of came to be. So, yeah, I try to write with anybody. You know, I tell people all the time, I love writing. I love that yin and yang of, you know, here's what I came up with, and then I take it, and here's what I did with it, and it kind of goes back and forth, and then, you know, you come up with something that's very, you know, unique, depending upon the different people and what they're contributing to the stew, as I call it, the sonic stew.
Yeah. Lovely. And now you're currently working with a UK record label. How did that come about?
You know what? Mr. Neil Pounds hit me up on Facebook, expressed an interest in what I was doing. And I had been working with a couple of different labels and releases. And so I thought, well, this would be nice, change of pace, you know, to work with somebody overseas.
Mm.
Because everybody had been here in the States. And I said, well, you know, I was interested in what he was saying, and he definitely had a great, you know, group of people in his stable that he had already been working with.
Yeah.
He'd already been working with Howard Johnson.
That's right, so, yeah.
I mean, you know,
he's putting some nice stuff
right
there. Yeah, that's right.
Say what?
I say he's putting some good stuff out, 6ix9ine Records. They're having a lot of success.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I went through his artists, and I was really digging the flavor of what was, you know, what he was doing. So, you know, we chit-chatted a bit, you know, and I sent him some stuff, and he was digging, you know, a couple of tracks that I had sent. And it was really simple, you know, he called me on the phone, and we talked for, you know, a real good bit, you know, just to kind of get an understanding of each other and what, you know, where we're both at and what he's trying to do and where I'm at in terms of what I'm trying to do as an artist. And we just hit it off really well. And so far it's been really, really nice. And he's made everything feel very comfortable. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. We got two tracks, you know, that I'm currently working on with him. We're currently now looking at remixes and various things like that. So it's coming together really fast, and I think, you know, people are going to dig it.
Great. Any sort of estimation as to when we might hear the new stuff coming out of 6ix9ine?
Well, you know,
before Christmas, spring.
I figure I would like to say before Christmas, but you know, that's again up to Mr. Pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just depends on how long it takes to, you know, put all the pieces, because, you know, there's a lot of working parts with all of it.
Oh, definitely.
You know, from graphics to, you know, to just the mixing and the mastering and all that wonderful stuff. But initially the songs are completed. So we're just really, you know, dressing everything and putting the fine touches on it to, you know, get it all polished. And so it's presentable to the public. And that's pretty much where we're at. So it'll be soon.
Great.
I would like to definitely say before Christmas.
So where can people buy your current stuff? Do you
have
an online presence?
Well, you can go to the website, www.otbmusic.net. And that usually will give you a link over to anything that's currently available, as well as Discogs. All the vinyl is, of course, there, and it's under Love Crime, and that's LOVCRYME, and as well as Birdbone Unlimited. Freaky is under Key 510, QUI 510. Also working with a group out of Oakland called Duo, and that's with my old bandmate, bass player Freddie Funk White, and Erica Lawrence, EDL, and they are a dynamic duo, I call them. they are a production team, and as well as Fred plays, he's just a killer bass player, and he plays with Lenny Williams, Club
Nouveau, right.
Various artists. Yeah, he tours, so he, you know, he's constantly busy, but we did some releases on him as well under the Risqué label. So, you know, I'm trying to work with as many people as possible. I tell all my friends, I say, you know, we have all these gifts that we use, and we forget, you know, that these gifts, you know, we should use them for ourselves to create. We use them to go play the weekend gigs and to do the tours and to, you know, do the studio sessions and, you know, work for other people, but we don't really use them, you know, to create for ourselves and to express ourselves. And that's something we shouldn't lose. And so I try to always encourage my friends, you know, to get together and let's create, you know, just for the sake of creating. Because I think that is what, you know, fuels the musical soul.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so I'm working with them, and we're also in a side project or a production group, Funky Bone, that's got a couple of tracks that we're, you know, going to have coming out later, probably next year. We're working on those now, but I try to work. And I was telling Neil yesterday, actually, I was telling him, I said, I'm trying to work with as many people as possible. And because I believe in working, you share and you learn. You know, you don't know everything. I know I don't.
Oh, no.
So I love working with you know, new people, young and old, because, you know, there's always some new perspective, which, you know, lends to a different interpretation. And that is what fuels my soul, is the process of learning and reinterpreting and reinventing myself. So, yeah, man, I try to keep busy. I don't let no grass grow up on my feet.
Absolutely. Great stuff. Tim, it's been such a pleasure talking to you tonight. Thank you very much for giving up your time. And good luck with all your future ventures.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. I'm so happy, you know, that, you know, I was able to do this. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for, you know, having me on.
Ah, you're very welcome. Very welcome. And I want to play out now with a track that you wrote for an artist called Key 510. This tune is called Freaky.
Such a freak.